Grainmaker.
Welcome everyone to the Grainmaker Wrestling Podcast, a very proud wrestling podcast covering everything from Winnipeg to worldwide. My name is Blair Pacheco. I hope you are having a fantastic day. We are like halfway through March. We will be hitting spring in no time, and I, for one, cannot wait. I'm done with the winter. I'm done with the cold temperatures. I need the shorts. I need the t-shirts. Let me sit out on the deck and enjoy the nice weather, because I am done with snow. And I'm sure you feel the same way, because it's been a bit of a year. But this week on the podcast, I am very stoked for my guest. They have been crushing it out in the Pacific Northwest, and they have almost become an adopted Canadian at this point with how much time they spend up here. And I am very excited for this chat. I'm excited for this talk, because we've got real talk with Rashad Tyson, and I'm adding him right now. Here we go. Rashad, how's it going?
Hey, thanks for having me, Blair.
I'm glad you could join me. I mean, you really have become an adopted Canadian as of late. When was your first time coming up here, whether it was for wrestling or not? Like, how long ago was that?
Oh, man. It's almost been like a year and a half now. So it was like this time last year, maybe closer to January. One of my bookings fell through for a show I was at, and Parm Singh, if you guys know who he is, like, that's like my like ride or die dude right there. That's like one of my best homies back in up in Canada. He invited me to a practice at Lionsgate one day, and I just had the opportunity to go up there and train. And the coach at the time was Cat Power. I think she's taking a little bit of a break right now to finish school, but it was kind of a spur of the moment. I went up there for training one day. Then I had another show about a month later cancel out. And then I went up for Dojo Wars, which was so much fun. Just like this being able to like jump in there and like have a match in front of the coaches before I even knew anyone. They were just so welcoming about it. And then after that, I left my dojo in Everett to go train in Surrey, and the rest is history.
I'm amazed at the unity and like the family aspect when it comes to like, you see it, whether it's in BC, Alberta, even in Manitoba, like coming up through Lionsgate or Clandestine, like all of those gyms, and just like how welcoming they are to everyone. And like the overall vibe, like that's what I love when it comes to wrestling, is the support and just like everyone bringing everyone else up. Like in this day and age, I think it's great to see.
Oh, absolutely. And, everyone at Lionsgate has been so welcoming, from like the coaches to the students to even like some of the workers who aren't training as often, because you know they are already getting booked on like the bigger shows and they spend more time in the gym, or you know they're always traveling. But everyone there, from like from beginner to coach, is just so welcoming. Mm-hmm. Even at the shows, like I remember the first time I ran into Artemis Spencer at like a Boom show. It came up to me, gave me a big hug. He's like, "Hey, Rashad, good to see you again." I was like, "Oh my gosh, I literally just met this guy like last week. This is so cool."
It's like in the same vein, because like I've been fortunate enough to talk to like a lot of people, and one of the people I talked to last year was Max from Boom. And when I was talking to him, he would always refer to me as Grainmaker. And I'm like, okay. And then now like other people have started doing that. Like I'll go to a show and it's like, "Hey, Grainmaker." I'm like, you can just call me Blair. It's cool. But like, it's one thing, like you meet some really incredible people. And I feel like when it comes to someone like something like what Artemis did, like, you know, that at that point, it's like, you are very welcome when it comes to that place, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, too, everyone is like very, very welcoming me going over there. I knew a couple of the Lionsgate students before I started training up there. Like I've been playing shows with Parm, Jack Lee and Sharif Morrow from Reloaded. I ran to them quite a few times. But yeah, like I said, there's definitely like a community aspect of how they approach keeping everyone connected and just having each other's backs when they go to different shows or we're out and about. It's very welcoming. It's refreshing. I'll just leave it at that.
Now, I mean, when I'm prepping for a guest like yourself, like I always, like I'll hit up Google and I'll be like, yeah, let's learn more about this person. One thing I never do is listen to like any previous interviews or anything like that, because like, I like to go in like with a fresh set. Like, I don't want to know what other people have asked sort of thing, which can be detrimental. But like, when I Google you, there's nothing out there. So everything is brand new to me. I'm like, oh, let's check out this cage match. And then it's like, there's nothing. I was like, okay, so this is going to be a learning experience. So let's start from the beginning. What was your first introduction to professional wrestling?
Oh, man. So I started training in about 2017. Okay. And between the pandemic and I kind of blew my Achilles at the time, too. I've been kind of off and on for like 2 or 3 years, but I'd say these last 2 years have like hit my stride. With that being said, I started in Spokane. I was a bouncer at this bar I was working at the time, and they just happened to have a micro wrestling show. And the guy who was renting out the ring, I had this like long blonde mohawk at the time. He took one look at me, and like I think he was like, it was weird because like I like popped off my shirt because like I was like covered in beer. I forgot what happened, but like he saw my abs and he's like, "Yo, do you want to wrestle?" And I was like, "Sure, man. This seems like a scam." But yeah, he's like, "Yeah, we have a show at this venue a week or two from now. Just come in. We'll give you some training." And like I showed up to this like dingy bar looking place, and there was like, lo and behold, there's a ring in there. And my first coach is this gentleman by the name of Shane McLean. He just kind of taught me the basics, rolls, how to bump, and like the rest kind of falls into place after that. I got my start in 2017 ish in Spokane. Okay. It feels like it's so long ago now.
Almost anything pre-pandemic seems like a lifetime ago, because it's like the world has changed so much since then. So like, I do understand where you're coming from. What about your first match? Like, how long after the training before you were able to have that?
Oh man, you know, I'm very open about this too. I was not ready for my first match. I wish I would have had more training going into that. It was a hot dumpster fire. I had about 6 months of training, I debuted in a one-on-one match against this guy by the name of Brad Elliott. He's not wrestling anymore, unfortunately. That guy had all the tools in the world to become a star. I remember that first match was just a hot dumpster fire. I wish I would have spent more time training before I did that. It was an experience. It was an experience that I'm glad I did, because I knew how to better myself after that. But something I wish I had taken more time to prep and get ready for that. So I definitely was not ready for that.
I mean, when you're looking at it, I mean, you kind of think with the trainers and the coaches, they're going to be like, hey, you're ready or not, you know? So like, to kind of throw you in there, it's kind of like, maybe I could have used a little bit more, you know, like you kind of hope that they would have noticed that before just letting you go at it.
Yeah. And like, and, you know, there's different levels to it too. It took me to move back out here to the west side of the state and start training at Dragonplex to realize how far off I was of being ring ready. Anyone who wants to get into this business, like they will jump at the opportunity to get in the ring. Like, and that's like something I try to tell people who want to get in this business as much as I possibly can. Like, you know, I still consider myself pretty green. I still consider myself pretty fresh. But I would never rush. I would tell people now, don't rush into it. Like, you can't, you're going to spend more time trying to escape a bad match for the rest of your career than you are like having a good match and then having the confidence to keep going. One of my buddies recently, his name is Top Speed Tommy Chan, but his first ever match was against Miles DeVille, and they tore the house down. And, you know, he spent like almost a full year training before he got that opportunity. And, you know, his coaches were Nicole Matthews, Artemis Spencer, Tony Baroni, very established people who are going to give him like the go ahead.
Yeah.
And nothing against my coach at the time, Shane, back in the day. But like, you know, I wish he would have kind of like held the reins back a little bit before giving me that green light. Because I'm telling you right now, I spent a lot of time thinking about that first match. Unfortunately, it's out there. If you ever find it, I apologize ahead of time.
Well, you talk about, you know, like still being fresh and green, but like I was watching some of your matches on YouTube, and one of the things I noticed was just the confidence that you have, whether it's cutting a promo or just your in-ring work. Like you say green and I'm like, not a chance, because like you have, I'll say it again, the confidence you have, I think that is something that like, it can't really be taught. You can say like, you can tell someone like, hey, you got to be more confident, you got to do this, but like, it really shows across camera. Like the match I watched was from Vancouver Island. I can't remember the gentleman's name you faced off with, but it was like, I'm watching and I was just like, the promo you cut before, it was like something you would see on TV. That was the same sort of level. So, I mean, like, I do think that like you say green and I'm like, I don't know about that.
I appreciate that, Blair. Yeah, that was, I believe that was Jordy Taylor.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that was a fun match. I'm actually heading back over there in a couple of weeks to face BJ Laredo for the Anarchy Rules title.
Nice. So,
be a lot of fun. Yeah, that was I appreciate you saying that, the confidence part. You know, sometimes I go out there, I feel like I'm not as confident as I should be. So I feel like I do a pretty good job hiding it. So thank you for that.
Wrestling is something that it's filled with highs and lows. And I mean, you know, like you mentioned with your first match, like, you know, being a hot dumpster fire, how do you kind of balance it out without getting too high, too low, and kind of like keeping like the mental aspect at like an even keel?
I think a lot of it goes into continually training and continually going to the gym and continually having a good diet. Like those three big things. Cause like I can have a bad match, and if I decide to open up 50 Timbits and go ham at it, you know, that's not going to be a good way going into the next week. And on the opposite end of that too, I try not to like if I feel like I had a great match, I'm not going to go to like McDonald's and order like 15 McChickens and like, McNuggets. But with that being said though, like it's one of the biggest pieces of advice I ever got when it first started was just stay humble, stay hungry, always continue learning. Mm-hmm. Those three things have kind of kept me at a nice even keel, and I'm glad that, like, you know, even if I feel like I had like an awesome match, I'm not gonna be like, oh yeah, that was it, that was my five star classic, someone call it Meltzer, give him send them the footage. Like I try to make sure that, like, okay, I did good, now how do I improve? Mm-hmm. If I had a bad match, all right, it is what it is, how do I improve? Like I continually just, how do I improve to get to like the next level? Because like all of us are trying to get to that next level no matter what. Mm-hmm. As long as I can keep doing that, keep having that mentality, that mindset, I feel like I'm doing the right things at least.
Now, were you a fan growing up of wrestling? Or yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. So, what's your first memory of that?
Oh man, okay. So I'm gonna date myself a little bit. I remember watching the first ever SmackDown. I remember, I remember my first ever pay-per-view I watched was. It was SummerSlam, and it was The Rock versus Brock. It was like The Rock's last match before he went to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And then I remember like one of my favorite matches ever growing up was Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho at Mania. Like that match was so good. I still reference that match to this day. Yeah, I remember like when I was a kid trying to watch wrestling because my mom wouldn't let me do it. And you know, it was like kind of that transitional period between like the Attitude Era and like Ruthless Aggression. So some of the stuff on TV at the time probably wasn't the best for like a teenager. But yeah, like I've been watching it ever since I was a kid. I had a nice little renaissance with like CM Punk and The Shield and being able to make those kind of shows live. Mm-hmm. I remember like recently I've been really getting into like Japanese wrestling. So I try to ingest as much as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. From like a kid to an adult, ingest as much as I possibly can.
I'll go back and watch some of that older Japanese stuff, and it blows my mind that, like, you know, because I mean, you said you were gonna date yourself, but I'm like, I was thinking like, oh yeah, like WrestleMania 2, you're fine, but like I think back of like the early 90s, and I'm like, okay, this is the stuff I'm watching, you know, like you're seeing like the smoking guns or whatever, and then like during the pandemic, I got into watching a lot more older Japanese stuff, like the All Japan Women and stuff. And I'm like, this is going on at the same time and is like light years ahead of what we're watching here in North America. And it just like, that just blows my mind anytime I think about it. And I'm so thankful for finding out about it.
Yeah, like one of my buddies, he's really into Great Muta and Misawa, and mm-hmm. just to watch some of their stuff. Oh my goodness. Again, same time as like, Golden Age, WWE, or like Attitude Era, like these guys are putting on like five star bangers. night in, night out. Even like someone like Giant Baba, I'm like, this dude's work rate for being as tall as he is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, do anything crazy, and like the fans love him. Like, I love watching that old stuff because like I find new things that people aren't doing right now that I could like, all right, I'm gonna steal this. So thank you, Misawa.
For your stuff, for yourself, like when it comes to in ring, who do you try to grab inspiration from? Because I mean, you are very well versed with wrestling, so I mean, your options are endless.
You know, it kind of evolves with what I want to be doing at the time. When I first started off, and even kind of right now, like two of my favorite wrestlers growing up watching was Randy Orton and The Miz. I love The Miz's character work. Man, Nicole Matthews is going to hate me for saying this too, because, but yeah, I love The Miz's character work. I love his moveset is like basic, but like at the same time, it's flashy. And then I've always been a fan of Randy, like just the way he like just technically wise and just the way he moves around the ring. It's so smooth. You can just see the confidence in everything he does, even like a basic promo. Like he's not going to like try to reinvent the wheel and drops these like hot bars of fire. He's just going to say basic stuff and make it sound like he's saying it. And like, yeah, but those two is particular, especially Randy. Like, I when I first started off, I did like the Garvin Stomp. I tried doing the RKO as a finisher. Now I guess definitely I'm trying to do more stuff that's like, I won't say it's like original, but like if I see it on TV, I try not to do it now. Mm-hmm. If I see it, like if I see my other fellow workers doing it at shows, I won't do it. But yeah, but specifically Randy and The Miz when I first started out, I still kind of carry The Miz's charisma and like Randy's, I want to say poise. I don't know if that's the correct word, but those two in particular, I got a lot of my influences and first couple moves from them for sure.
I think one thing when you like really start looking into it a lot more is like, I mean, you can watch as a fan and be like, okay, well, you know, like I'll say a Curt Hawkins, for example, you know, like, yeah, okay, he's not, you know, overly flashy, but his moveset is very solid. You watch him in the ring and the guy is great. Same with like a Norman Smiley, you know, like never really got the chance, but like he can work. And that's one thing that I think like everyone always thinks of like Randy Orton as like, you know, like a mega superstar, but like his in-ring work is also very, very solid.
Mm-hmm. And like, man, you said Norman Smiley. I remember like I was just watching some stuff from him and like, I think it was right after he left the Fed and he went to like TNA for like a little bit of time. But like he was one of those just like you can count on him for a good match. He doesn't have to be flashy. He doesn't have to go out there and steal the show, but you know he was technically sound. You know, if he was with someone who was like just getting into the business, he's gonna be able to carry them. But like I try to keep things as like basic as possible when I'm in there, because like when I pull out like a big move, I hope that I get a better reaction out of the crowd because of that.
Now, like I was, you know, checking out some different stuff, and one thing I noticed is like you are a very creative person, because it can be a different promotion and you will have a different sort of, you know, I'll say a character there. And it's not like it's just Rashad Tyson all throughout, you know? So like, how do you kind of come up with your ideas for this or your inspirations when it comes to your creativity? Because I mean, even Camp Counselor Coleman is something different than what you're going to see at, you know, like Vancouver Island Pro Wrestling.
You know, I always reach out to the promoter and ask what they kind of want out of it first. That's usually where I start with it. Like, I wouldn't just show up to like Vancouver Island and be like, "Hey, it's Camp Counselor Coleman." Like, I mean, like if they want that, by all means, I'll do it. But like, I'm glad that I get to do just that specific thing at SOS. With that being said, though, I get a lot of my creativity, honestly, from mediums outside of wrestling. Mm-hmm. This is one gimmick I'm doing right now at Peak Sports Entertainment. It's kind of like a cross between like the Phantom of the Opera and like the Black Swan. But like that one has been my idea, my baby for like the better half, like a year and a half, 2 years now. And just being able to like do that at Peak, where I trained there for almost 3 years before I went up to Lionsgate. And, you know, just being able to do that over there was just so refreshing. But like, yeah, just I kind of get my creativity from as much as I possibly can outside of the wrestling medium. There's a couple times I've gone to some promotions and I'm like, oh, that's The Undertaker. Or like, oh, that's Kane. Oh, that's the Big Show. You're 7 feet tall. I get it. And you know, like it's not, just be original. That's all I want to say. Just be original.
Do you ever have reservations when it comes to like the creative aspect? Because I mean, even I know myself, like I'll come up with an idea and then you kind of almost hum and haw about it. And it's like, ah, is it a good idea? And then never actually following through with it. So how do you kind of get past those roadblocks?
Oh man, it's hard. Cause like, I feel like, so like I someone asked me this recently too. And I kind of thought I'd use this analogy. My favorite restaurant is a buffet. I love variety. I love being able to pick and choose what I want to eat and like how much I want to eat. And like, I kind of treat my creativity process like that when it comes to going to other promotions. Like some promotions I'll go to for the first time, I'll ask them like, hey, I do this character over here. Would you want anything exclusive for here? And you know, well, recently I've been told I pitched that to someone and they're like, you know, I have this idea for you, you know, and we'll talk about it. And, you know, just hearing that was like, okay, cool. Like, you know, I love being able to portray different gimmicks and different characters in different shows. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, I get to look at something different. I get to think of a different moveset. Like Camp Counselor Coleman's moveset is completely different than like the artist formerly known as Rashad Tyson, mm-hmm. or anything I do at Boom, or anything I do at Peak or Combat Pro. Like even like a face versus a heel dynamic that I do, like I'm going to do it differently everywhere. Like I just love the variety of being able to do different gimmicks, different movesets, different character work at like different promotions. Keeps things fresh, keeps me excited, keeps the creativity going. And, you know, one day if someone's like, hey, can you just be Coleman forever? I'll be like, absolutely I will. Because, you know, I have the experience of being Coleman already.
Okay. Now, one thing I always stopped asking was like, you know, like people you want to wrestle against, people you want to face off against, but like you had a tweet that I have to like put you on the spot about your super indie 100 mile per hour match.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Okay. If you're booking yourself against anyone for this match this year, who is it going to be? Because I'm all ears at this point.
I have two people and one's a rematch. Okay. Give me Travis Williams or give me Judas Icarus. Oh. Like, I had a match with Travis recently. I was actually probably September at a Dusk Pro. Unfortunately, the match footage is lost. I have never seen that match back. I want to really, really bad. I want to run that back with Travis so bad. Same thing. And like, I want to face Judas so bad. Just those two in particular. I just know we can go bang, 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 bang as fast as we possibly can. Just nonstop balls to the wall. Moonsaults. Give me an Oz cutter. Give me like everyone's getting to again the destroyer. Spanish flies everywhere. I want to have that match so bad. I want that match so bad. I'm sorry. I want that match so bad. Either of them.
Like if you're gonna call your shot, you might as well pick two of the best out there. So I mean, I'd be into that. I'm disappointed the footage is lost. That'd be great to check out.
Yeah, one of these days I'll ask Parm for it. I'm sure there's somewhere. We haven't been able to find the footage recently. No.
So I mean, I kind of reached out to you beforehand, and I said one thing I've been trying to do is find out more about you as a person outside of wrestling, because I mean, I love wrestling, but it is not my entire life, just like it is not your entire life. And I have to ask about movies, because you recently rewatched some early 2000s comedies. How do those hold up from the original watchings?
Oh man, not good. Not good. Jokes did not age well. Oh brother, let me tell you, I watched Wedding Crashers recently and I was like, still funny, but cringe, just cringe, yeah. cringe. I recently watched Zoolander as well. I love that movie, and the Blue Steel thing is still so funny to this day. Yeah, like some of those movies do not age well, some of them do.
I mean, like, do you go often to the theaters? Because like I was kind of like looking through the listings, and I used to be someone who would go every week. There would always be something in the theaters, whether it's an Oscar nominated one, or even just like a slapstick comedy, you would always be able to find something. But like nowadays, it's not the same. Do you still go often?
Not really, honestly. No. I remember the last movie I watched was 1917. I think that was like 5 years ago.
And like, wow.
I'm glad I watched that movie in theaters. That movie is amazing. I'm a big movie guy. I have my film degree from Eastern Washington University. I worked on a couple movies and a couple TV shows while I was out there too. So the pop culture sphere and ingesting as much media as possible, I'm all about that, my downtime. But that being said, though, I think the only movie I'm probably going to watch in theaters this year is probably Dune. I did watch, actually, I take it back. I watched Barbie last year in theaters, and I watched Scream 6. And
okay. I'm glad,
because both those movies, they slapped. Like, both those were my jam, which I know they're opposite ends of the spectrum, but both were a lot of fun to watch.
We did watch Barbie on streaming, but the Scream, like, I haven't seen any of them since Scream 2. Like, I have trailed right off when it comes to that franchise. I feel like a lot of the kind of, like, I don't want to say remakes, but like the ones, like, you know, like the Saws and stuff like that, which like kept going, like after the first couple, I just kind of did a hard pass on it. So maybe it's something to get back into.
I will say this, some of the movies that are kind of rebooting or reimagining themselves post-pandemic are pretty solid. Like, give Evil Dead Rise a chance. That is the most violent movie I've ever watched. And then, like, the last two Scream movies are pretty solid as well, too. I honestly think the pandemic kind of filtered out a lot of the bad producers out there. So the money they're throwing at some of these remakes, I'm kind of happy about. Mm-hmm. I know what you mean, though, because some remakes are just not worth my time watching.
Yeah, like the remakes or the, like, the constant sequels. Like, you know, like, I know that they're doing, like, a remake of The Fall Guy, I think, which was a TV show, and then now it's going to be a movie. And it's almost like, I don't know, like, it'll work maybe, but like, how does it translate, you know? Like, but
like, as long as I'm like, I'm definitely one of those guys, if I'm watching a movie 10 minutes in, if I'm not into it, I will dip out. Like, I will leave the theater, or I will shut off the streaming service.
That's one thing when it comes to streaming is that I'm very thankful for. It's like, you're not committed, you're not into it, you can check out something else. But like, what I've found for myself is like, I'll go back, and I'm big on like the 80s, almost, not slapstick, but like the Naked Guns, or like I watched Airplane the other day because it's something I hadn't seen, and I'm like, yes, I will fall asleep to this.
Have you seen Blazing Saddles yet?
I have never seen Blazing Saddles.
You have Blazing Saddles to watch. Gene Wilder, Richard Pryor wrote the script. Mel Brooks directed the movie. So good. It's such a timestamp of the era too.
Like, I'll give that one a go. I rewatched Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, yeah. That soundtrack is slaps. That soundtrack is a jam.
Yeah. there's one thing I love. It's Beverly Hills Cop, like that soundtrack, and then the soundtrack for Commando, because like, I think that's one of the few movies that uses like a timpani in their like musical soundtracks. I'm like, man, I can get behind this.
I don't think I've seen the entirety of Commando. I think I've only seen like the last like 10 minutes of him just massacring everyone in the compound, and I think he like shoots like a rocket through someone's chest. I might be wrong.
I vaguely remember that, so you could be on to it.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Do you find you're drawn to one genre more than any others?
Yes, absolutely. My partner and I are really into horror movies. Horror movies I will watch. Like they recently have never seen we watched Dusk Till Dawn. They've never seen Dusk Till Dawn.
Okay. And
I try to tell them, like, just go in there with like no expectations. You can't know anything about the plot, because like, that's the whole twist of the plot. And that one, and then we recently watched the entirety of the Evil Dead series. We watched Evil Dead 2, the Evil Dead 2017 remake, and we did skip Army of Darkness. Nothing against it, just not my cup of tea. I can watch a horror movie every single night and have no regrets whatsoever.
I will never understand my parents letting me, as like a 13-year-old kid, rent From Dusk Till Dawn for a birthday party.
Oh no, that's either the best party of all time or the worst.
Because like, we're watching this and it takes like a sharp turn very quickly, and you're like, oh, okay.
A couple sharp turns, like that opening scene in the convenience store, and then the whole Selma Hayek dancing thing. Ooh, that's not for kids.
And even like Quentin kind of like booking himself into that one role so that he's like, I think he's like drinking liquor off Selma Hayek. I think that's what it is. And it's like, come on, bro. Like,
he knew what he was doing.
for yourself, do you have any all-time favorites? Like ones that you will constantly go back to watch, and like, oh, we'll do a two-parter here. Ones that you like are favorites, or also ones that if you're flipping through TV that you will always stop to watch.
Okay, so it's kind of seasonal for me for this, but if it is the Christmas season, I will stop whatever I'm doing to finish or watch Die Hard. I will always, and I will die on the hill that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. that one, and a lot of my friends who get into horror movies and don't really know where to go, I always tell them one movie to watch. Watch The Descent. And I promise you, if you were not scared of closed spaces, you will be after watching this movie.
That The Descent is the one with the caves, right?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, definitely go check that one out. That one is, that's a creepy one. I remember seeing that one in theaters. Like, I find with a lot of horror movies, it's tough to get like that scare. You'll get like a lot of like the jump scares, but like a horror movie to really creep you out. Like, I find that's tough nowadays.
You know, the scariest movie I've watched recently was the first Sinister. Because just between the soundtrack and the way that they use their jump scares, like, because it's a lot of like, have you ever seen like an Edgar Wright film? Like he did like a Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead. He has a lot of like visual gags that like instead of like the dialogue is the joke, like the visuals on screen is the joke. Sinister did that, and like with jump scares, like it's a lot of like you're seeing this in the foreground, but then boom, stuff in the background pops up, and it's just so terrifying. Give that a watch if you get a chance.
I'll check that one out. It's funny you mentioned like Hot Fuzz, because I think like they just had the anniversary of when that movie was first done, like last week or 2 weeks ago. It was like it's
been 10 years.
Yeah, it's been, man, is it 10 or 15 years? It's been a while, but I was like, I haven't watched that movie since it came out, and I'm like, I bet that still goes just with the cast they had in that one.
Oh yeah, that movie, man. That one, Shaun of the Dead, and what's the third one?
World's End.
Yeah, World's End. All three of those are so good. And Edgar Wright is just such a good director, because like again, he takes like these like visual gags and he makes the joke out of that instead of like relying on dialogue. Mm-hmm. It was like a scene from Hot Fuzz where like Simon Pegg's character is like, "Oh, I don't drink," and then like it goes from like pouring a beer, boom, water. I was like, there you go. Those are the visual jokes that we like.
Like one other thing you kind of mentioned that you used to be into was older UFC. Oh, yeah. Do you still watch now, or are you kind of checked out?
It's not that I'm checked out. It's that I don't feel like I have like enough time to ingest it. Because like when I was growing up, it was like Forrest Griffin, Rampage Jackson, Chuck Liddell, like peak Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz, like those guys are running stuff, like George St. Pierre, BJ Penn, Anderson Silva, just like champions for so long. And like now I don't recognize anyone anymore. Like Israel Adesanya, I think, is the only guy I know. I asked my buddy the other day, he's like, "Hey, is John Jones still fighting?" And he's like, no bro, he's not. But yeah, I'm it's not that I'm checked out. It's like I feel like I try to watch as much pro wrestling as I possibly can, just so I can see, I can keep up with the product. I can keep up with the landscape of what's going on at like the indie level to like the pro level to overseas. Unfortunately, I don't have the time to watch UFC as often as I like to.
I found the biggest thing that kind of deterred me from continuing to watch was like, if you go watch a paper, if you say you're going to meet up with your buddies at a bar, you know, have a drink, have some food, it starts at 9 o'clock. You are not getting out of there till like 12:30, 1 o'clock. And like, by that point, I want to be in bed. Absolutely. So like, unless the card is going to be 2 hours, I don't want anything to do with it.
And like, you know, some indie wrestling shows are kind of like that too. Like just get a smaller card. It's just easier for people to ingest. And like, I love the UFC still for what they're doing. It's just weird watching them, like, cause it's slowly turning into like their presentation is almost feeling like a WWE event. Like everyone has entrances that are very elaborate. They have their own entrance songs. And then like, I saw someone try to do like a backflip off the cage recently, and I was like, okay, this showmanship, I'll give you that. But at the same time, you know, you guys are trained killers and fighters. Just stick to that. Like, you know, just leave the pageantry to us. Like, we'll take care of it by all means.
I did like that you mentioned Forrest Griffin, because I think he was someone that got a lot of people back into UFC with his fight with Stephen Bonner at the Ultimate Fighter. Like, I was familiar with UFC for what they were doing with, like, you know, Shamrock and Severn way back when, renting the VHS tapes, but like that really brought a lot of people back. And I think that you couple that with, you know, George St. Pierre, BJ Penn, their rivalry, that helped. Because I mean, I remember going to a Boston Pizza and I loved BJ Penn. I was the only one there cheering for him, even though he was going to get his ass kicked. But
man, BJ is my dude too. And like, I love watching his like training videos too. He had this one training video where he would like jump out of the water and he had like a 20 inch vertical leap. And cause it was like something about him. Like he said he would like lift weights underwater in Hawaii. I'm like, that's so cool. Like, but it's like stuff like that. Like I take nothing away from UFC fighters or anyone in mixed martial arts. Cause like their training and their discipline is unmatched by any other sport. Cause they do this like year round to fight maybe two or three times tops a year. And like those are like make or break fights too. You lose that fight, you can lose out on millions of dollars moving forward. You win that fight, then it's up the card and it's continuing, you know, to better and bigger opponents. Like I just love watching their drive and how they like approach the mixed martial arts. Cause like I try to adapt some of their training styles into my own stuff too. But again, they're on a whole new level. I don't know if I could ever do what they do, honestly.
It's really like interesting watching the career trajectories of some fighters, because like I remember there was one local guy who kind of made it to a few shows. His name was Roland Delorme, and he was more of like a grappler type fighter. And like he had a lot of promise, and then you know you get a couple decisions, you know, a couple fights that aren't, you know, too appealing, and then all of a sudden you just see it like almost fly right off a cliff. And like now, I mean, I'm not even too sure what he does. I don't even know if he fights anymore, but like it can be a very slippery slope if you don't really capture the attention and the fans very quickly.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like most, I don't want to say like most jobs are like that, but like at UFC, I feel like is definitely like you, if you lose one bad fight, you are not coming back. Like there, because there are hungrier guys who are, or they're not hungry guys. There are guys, there's like the next guy up. I remember when Lyoto Machida lost against Shogun Rua, and then he just disappeared. And I'm like, dude, you like gave me one of the best knockouts of Rashad Evans of all time. Like I still have that picture saved on my phone. Rashad Evans getting knocked out, and then he lost to Shogun Rua, and he just disappeared. And I'm like, dude, like what happened? Like I don't know. I don't know like exactly how UFC does their booking or how they operate behind the scenes, but it's just weird seeing someone like lose who was on top of the mountain and then just never get back to the top.
I mean that's a good comparison with wrestling, because I mean you're always seeing like the next generation kind of coming up, and like I mean you're someone, you've been going at it for I mean 7 years almost now at this point, and you've been able to see, you know, like the next wave kind of chomping at the bit. Is there anyone that really you've taken notice of, just what they've been able to do in the ring or how they hold themselves?
Oh man, like I got asked this recently too. There's this crop of students coming out of Oregon Pro right now, and a lot of them have already been working matches, but just like, okay, so the Hammer Bros, the Flamin' Aces, Amira, Stephen Bradley, Frankie Dove, Charlie Avell, all those guys coming out of Oregon Pro, like keep an eye on them. Like they're probably going to be like that group of talent that we'll look back at like 5 years from now, 10 years from now in the Pacific Northwest and be like, those guys were the most consistent workers in the Pacific Northwest. Outside of that, though, up here in Canada, this is a guy I had just recently had a match with. It was his first match. His name is Joey Tran. That guy is literally his whole gimmick is so good. His gimmick is he is an unlockable character in from Tekken or Street Fighter. It's so good. It's so good. He literally has a 10-hit combo. Give this guy a watch if you get a chance. He's gonna be facing Tony Baroni at Dusk Pro pretty soon.
I saw the ad for that one.
Yeah, he's that kid's good. But yeah, just a lot of some of the guys coming out of Lionsgate right now, like the way they approach training, and they're ready. They're ready for an opportunity. They're ready to kick some ass. Sorry if this is PG, but that's like okay. Just keep an eye out for some of those Lionsgate guys. Just off the top of my head too, Magnum Mel, Marty Royale, and Eddie Ross. Like all four of those guys are so good and ready to work.
You've really been like, I mean, Canada up in the Washington, Oregon area, like you're really putting a stamp on that. Do you have any aspirations to branch out of the area?
Oh, absolutely. I want to go to Mexico one day. I want to go to Japan one day, and I want to go to England one day.
Yeah.
And all three of those places have different styles. I want to, especially in Mexico, I want to like get way better at lucha. And I want to be able to like train down there and have matches down there one of these days. Unfortunately, wrestling ain't cheap, so I got to figure out a way to finance my way to come to go down there. But one of these days, either Japan, either Mexico, either England, those three countries right off the top of my head are like premier destinations for me.
I love the idea of adding more of like a lucha style to your moveset already, because like with what you have, adding that, I mean, like talk about like leveling up your, I don't want to say character, but like leveling up yourself, like huge opportunity.
Oh yeah, that'd be so much fun too. I've done a couple of Thursday classes with Artemis Spencer and I learned a little bit of lucha, but that's definitely something I want to like just immerse myself in for a couple months and just see what I can get out of that.
Because Artemis just recently had a trip down to Mexico, if I'm not mistaken, because I think he had a match at Lucha Memes against Ricky Marvin, if I'm not mistaken. I saw some clips of that one. So I was like, I was hyped when I noticed he was going down there. I think it's a great opportunity. And even I know they've had, you know, like, you know, people from the BC area. I mean, Miles and Liza and a few others have gone down there, wrestled Eli Surge and like, just what they've been able to bring back for themselves. It's a great opportunity.
Yeah, and actually, we had Ricky Marvin up here a couple months ago. He hosted a seminar for us at Lionsgate. And man, just like I said, too, like between the three different countries, like there's different styles. There's different ways of approaching training. There's even different ways of how to roll. And just like doing some of the roles that like Ricky Marvin is trying to show us, like it's definitely something that I want to get better at and just be able to go down and immerse myself for like a month or two, maybe even like 3 months, 6 months, however long I need to kind of get that fulfillment out of like being down there.
Now, I always like to ask for memorable matches for yourself or memorable matches, memorable moments, anything that really stands out to you for yourself.
Yeah. You know, someone asked me this recently too. My first ever hardcore match, I was in a tag team at the time and we faced Amira and the homicidal artist Drexel. Mm-hmm. And I remember that was my first ever hardcore match. And that was the first time we ever teamed as a tag team too. And I had a $5 bill stapled to my head and it stayed on my head for the entire match. And I still have that $5 bill thumbtacked to my wall. But yeah, especially last year, I faced Drexel and Funny Bone like three or four times in numerous hardcore matches. But just any of those matches, it was like, man, I can't believe I'm actually doing this. Like I'm actually like taking a staple to my back. I've never like bled in a match before, but like those two or three times I faced Drexel or Funny Bone, just blood gushing, just all over the place.
I mean, now after having that, any aspirations to partake in a death match?
Absolutely. Yeah. I do. And again, it's just one of those things, like I just need to get it checked off my my bucket list. Next, 2 weeks from now, I'll be facing BJ Laredo in an Anarchy Rules match. Not 100% sure what the rules apply of that, but let's see if we can get some color out there.
Yeah, you'll be coming out with like your knee pads with like thumbtacks through them, you know, like anything you can kind of have. I mean, hey, just throwing it out there.
Ooh, okay, say less.
I haven't seen anyone do that, so.
Yet.
Oh, okay. I always like to ask for a match recommendation. So one that you are a fan of that you think the listener should go check out, and I'll say it has to be different than Jericho HBK.
Deal. You can Google this. Look up The Great Space War. It is a one-hour match of just straight chaos. They do one every single year. The Great Sasuke was in one recently. Actually, maybe like he was probably in one like maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. But they dress up as different American pop culture icons. So the one I watched recently, it had like R2-D2, C-3PO, Batman, Superman, and a couple of Ninja Turtles. So give that a watch. Just Google The Great Space War. You'll find it. Trust me. It is an hour of straight chaos and so much fun to watch.
Look, I have, you know, like heard some great recommendations and like I'm pretty familiar with, I'll say 99% of them, but this one I've never heard of and I cannot wait to check this out.
I'll send you a link after this too. Okay. Not to name drop, but like Sue Young sent me this link, and I think it was in the middle of doing like either my like taxes or homework, and like I just stopped everything I was doing once the match started, and I was like, oh my god, that's Yoda, that guy dressed as Yoda, and like oh, it's so good, just give it a watch. I'll send you the link after this.
When it comes to wrestling, this is one thing that I love when it can be like the creative, the wacky, all of this sort of thing, like and it's. the past year, like I'll say with Boom, what they did with Abraham Lincoln and that storyline, that was perfect. Like, talk about doing something different, but it still connects with the fans and it allows you to be the Pacific Northwest. There are so many promotions, but this allows a promotion to stand out. So I love when people can really dive into that creative, different aspect of professional wrestling.
I saw a match at Boom that blew my mind. It is the greatest match I've ever watched live. It was Travis Williams versus Judas Icarus. And at one point there was an invisible gun, and it was the greatest match I've ever seen in my entire life. And Travis did literally all of John Cena's movesets, and it was, oh my, if you ever get the chance, watch this match. I like lost my mind watching this match. It was perfection. Perfection.
Now, you had mentioned the match with BJ Laredo. What else do you have for upcoming shows in the future?
Oh, man. So this weekend's going to be pretty big. Friday, Camp Counselor Coleman will be making his appearance back at SOS Pro Wrestling in Tacoma. The Son of the Beach tournament rolls on in full effect. Saturday, Dojo Wars in the morning, and then I'll be competing against Mr. Marty Royale and at ASW. In Vancouver. Sunday, it's going to be going back to Peak Sports Entertainment. The artist formerly known as Rashad Tyson will be coming back. So I get to do every one of my gimmicks this weekend.
Perfect.
Right now, in a couple weeks.
When it comes to social media, where can the people find you?
Absolutely. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, X, and YouTube at The Rashad Tyson or at Real Talk Vlog. You can also find me on Facebook at The Rashad Tyson. Other than that, though, slide into my DMs, hit me up.
Perfect. Rashad, thank you so much for joining me. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Blair. I cannot wait to hear this back, and I will be back anytime you need me.
Thank you so much to Rashad, and thank you for checking out the podcast. I say it every time. I will always say it. I truly appreciate you taking time out of your day to listen to me talk about wrestling. If it's your first time listening, you can find me up on all social media, Grainmaker Wrestling Podcast, except for TikTok. Not on there, probably never will be. Up on all podcast streaming platforms. And you can find me every Saturday doing Four Exposure with my good friend Pluggo as we take a look at the world of independent wrestling. That's up on the Love Wrestling YouTube page. Thanks again for checking out the podcast. We'll talk soon.